Hello and welcome to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. I'm going to move my microphone thingy off on my headset so I'm not, you don't hear me breathing at you. Or when I emphasize things. Hello and welcome to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today. It is 10 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, January 20th, 2026. I am really happy to be with you to just talk, and a lot that I have to share. But it was really fun this past weekend, Friday night. I'm working on something, doing something. And my son called me and I said, well, what are you doing? Are you on your way home from work? Because sometimes he'll just call on his way home from work because he can think, you know, or we can have a really quickie conversation. But he said, no, I'm on my way to Denver. And I said, for what? And he said, I've got Steve, my brother and sister-in-law have season's tickets to the Broncos. And they had a ticket for him for the playoff game, which the Broncos won, like, in a really exciting game. They won by 3 points. So he was on his way here. He got there really late. And they went to the game on Saturday. And then Sunday, I met them over at our favorite restaurant when he's here, the Bull and Bush, for lunch. So it was really fun. And then yesterday morning, he came over. My sister-in-law brought him over, and we had breakfast and talked and got a chance to just catch up, the two of us. And then I took him to the airport. He drove and I drove back home. But the thing that was just so magical about, I mean, that all was really cool, you know, spontaneous, wonderful, fun stuff, joyful stuff. But yesterday morning, everyone woke up to a surprise snow. There was about 2 inches of snow on the ground when I woke up yesterday morning. And I'm getting my heavy, you know, pants on, my snow pants, to go for a walk with Grace. And I'm telling her it's a double sweater day. So, you know, we're going to go out and take a walk, because I saw what the temperature was. It was 20 or 19. And so we get all ready. I walk into the living room and there's snow outside. So we didn't go for a walk because she would have frozen her little feet. But that was just joyful to have that happen too. So he got home safely, had a great weekend. And so that was a blessing. But it was fun just to talk to him and catch up about the kids. And he was telling me that Bowden, my grandson, we were just talking about all of them, and they had done family pictures. And it was really, he always says, when Kristen tells me we're going to do family pictures, I get a stomachache. I want to go throw up, because he said it's such a project. It's just emotions go run wild. They're 3 kids, you know, 8, 5, and 4. So they've just always been, and they used to do like 2 or 3 of them a year, family photo sessions. This one, they waited. They hadn't done any other ones. So it was pretty much Christmas themed. And he goes, I'll send you the link. He goes, there are like 200 pictures. And I had such a kick out of looking at those pictures, because you could see, there were about 200 pictures. You could see the kids being, yay, we're going to take pictures. This is great. And their smiles, and they're happy, and they're all genuine. And then you see them kind of, deteriorate's a big word, but you see them like fall out of the fun of it. And Quinn, my oldest granddaughter, just has this great smile. So Quinn has her great smile in all the pictures, except you can even see where the smile's genuine and where it's starting to just be a smile. And so it was really fun to watch him. And Maisie and Bo, you know, Bo's got his cheesy grin too that he puts on, but Maisie is like the wild card. You know, you can just see her turn into her feisty self, you know, as the pictures go on. And they're just really cute. And it was just delightful. And we were talking about that. And he said, yeah, Bowden's in kindergarten and Maisie's in pre-K. So now all of them go to school, and the school is right across the street from their house. It's a Catholic school. So he says, we walk in And he says, yeah, Bo's doing well in kindergarten. His teacher really likes him. He's young. He's got some, we were talking about report cards. He goes, he's got some stuff to deal with, but his teacher really likes him and she's encouraging him and, you know, just has to remind him. He skipped a year. You know, he went from pre-K 3 to kindergarten because he's very smart and he needs to be challenged, but maturity wise, he needs to catch up. So anyway, I said, well, you know, he'll do it. And he goes, I think she really likes him and she's helping him. So he said, I think he's doing pretty well. And he wouldn't be doing as well probably if he weren't challenged. So anyway, he's just a handsome, handsome kid, bright blue eyes, blonde hair, just a lovely little spirit. He really is. And he says, yeah, he's got about four or five girls, you know, that like him in his class. I said, really, only four or five? And he said, yeah, but there's this little girl, and I can't remember what he said her name is, so I'm just going to call her Sally. He said, we walk in one set of doors, not the main doors, when I walk him over there to school. And he said, we drop Maisie at her class, and then I walk Bo to his. And he said, this little girl, Sally, comes in the main entrance. And he goes, it's really cute because as we're walking in, she'll come in that door. And he said, and then she kind of hurries up and, you know, rushes up to see Bodie to meet up with us as we're walking in. And he said, the first time she comes up to Bo and she goes, hi, Bowden. And he said, hi, Sally, you want to hold hands? And he goes, they held hands and just walked off into class. It was so cute. I can just see it. But that's him. You know, he is just a sweet, kind little kid. And, but it was really sweet. It was really fun. I just have that picture in my head of he and little Sally. I have no idea what she looks like. Just walking off into class together, getting ready to go. But it was sweet. That was a really fun time for me. But anyway, last week on the show with CA, we were talking about release, and that is the topic of the teaching segment today, because over the last week, it has just exploded in my experience, and I'm really, really excited to share it. I mean, one thing after another, and just dots connecting, you know, and breadcrumbs, and all kinds of things that have just shown up that are all about release and the powerful concept that release is. And, you know, last week I was talking about just going into some weird mode, and I pretty much watched myself take down the whole Christmas tree and put everything away and put together a donation for the vats of ornaments that I wasn't ever going to use again, that I had used up, so to speak. And that's one thing that I want to say, I don't think we hit that part of it. You know, as we use things, they're no longer serving us because we have used up their usefulness for us. And that's just evolution. You know, that's just growth. That's how things go. But I had another experience of that, of just that, like a power clearing last Saturday that I was just kind of part of. You know, I was kind of like the worker as this whole thing went together. I bought a set of dishes about 2 years ago, and they're a beautiful dark blue, beautiful color, stoneware. They're stoneware, but they were the strangest, like really impractical set of dishes I've ever owned. The dinner plates and salad plates were fine, but the bowls were like pasta bowls, you know, big, kind of the flat, big, round pasta bowls. And the mugs were like giant soup mugs. They weren't coffee mugs. So, as I said, not terribly practical. I mean, they were great for cereal or soup or, you know, eating ice cream, but you wouldn't have a cup of coffee in them. So, as I said, not terribly practical. Now, I used them for 2 years. I was fine with them, but until they started scratching, like the blue glaze, because they weren't expensive, but I was really hoping that they would be sturdier, because that's happened to me before when I've bought colored dishes that were just, that were stoneware that weren't, you know, the highest quality. But when I bought those, when I bought them, I didn't realize that they were so odd, you know, that the mugs were so big and the bowls, you know, I saw the bowls, but when I looked at the bowls, I thought, oh, those will go in a dishwasher easily, easier than a deeper bowl. I didn't realize how big they were, or the bowls or the mugs. So, and if I had, I wouldn't have ordered them, but I don't think I could tell from the picture when I ordered them, or, you know, as happens to me once in a while, or more than once in a while, I was blinded by the price and just went for it because I know I got them at a really good price. But, you know, I've used them every day, and not the bowls and the mugs, but the plates. And I have a random assortment of coffee mugs, so it's really no big deal. Until, as I said, they started showing scratches from being used. So a couple weeks ago, I found a glossy white modern set of dishes, stoneware, but glossy. So it's not just the glaze and the dish, but there's a coating on it that should be more substantial. And they're white, so they're not going to show white scratches if that happens to occur. But they're absolutely perfect, you know, and I know that I feel like they're going to be a little more substantial. And they arrived like Friday of last week. And Saturday, I unpacked them, used the packing material to repack the blue dishes, wash the new ones, put them away in the cabinet. And the Vietnam vets picked up the blue ones about an hour ago. And it was just like, I got in that flow. It was just an incredible flow, and I was having fun. And I mean, by the time I was done, I didn't use all the boxes in the packing stuff from the white ones to pack away the blue ones. But what was left over, I broke down, had them in a stack, and took them out to my recycle bin. I mean, it was like, it was started and finished over the course of a few hours. And it was just another victorious project. And it was kind of a workout because dishes are heavy. Dishes are really heavy. But I know they're going to be loved. And I know they're going to be used. And they'll continue to serve their purpose. And it was a setting, place setting of 12. I mean, 12 place settings, I should say. But, you know, they could be broken down and sold individually. So I think the vets will make the most of them too, as well as whoever they end up with as their new home. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's the energy of January, a new year. I don't know what it is, but it seems like one thing after another this month is sort of like being put to bed. You know, I'd used those dishes and I was done with them. But somebody else will love them. But other things, other than the clearing things and the Christmas stuff, you know, I went to the dentist. And for just a, you know, for a cleaning, and ended up that a crown was broken. And so I had a new crown put in last week. And then, you know, things that just tap you on the shoulder, kind of like those blue dishes that, you know, you probably could do better than this. I bought a new pillow. And that pillow is like magical. It's just magical. I'm sleeping so much better on this new pillow. And then the other thing I did, because I clench my teeth at night, is I got a new mouth guard. I haven't had one in a few years. So I think the pillow, the new mouth guard, and getting rid of things, you know, dropping things off my cart, taking care of things, wellness checkups, just all this stuff. Plus, you know, now in January, it's time to gather stuff for taxes because I'm self-employed, and just get stuff together. And I love doing that. I really enjoy doing that. But it seems like it's been a month of space clearing, you know, getting things out of my space physically and consciously. And, you know, when stuff isn't tapping you on the shoulder, you have a lot more focus to give what you're doing. And you have a lot more ability to just be in the moment and make the most of it. So anyway, thank you for being here today. Again, I want to say thanks. This show is live on 12radio.com and streaming on YouTube. If you'd like to join the chat, go to 12radio.com. You can click chat, and then you can click the YouTube link posted under my banner. You can also subscribe to my YouTube channel. I don't do readings on the show, but if you'd like a reading or healing from me, you can find me every day on 1-2-listen.com. I'm usually available mid to later morning Pacific time into the evening. If you don't see me or if I'm busy, schedule a call, put in a call back request. I'm notified immediately and we'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. My Clear for the New Year 15-minute time-based session will be available for the next, 10, 11 days? January's almost over. It's crazy. Wonder how much more I'll get done this month. It's a great way. It's all about releasing, you know, releasing what's in your way of having a great year, having a powerful expression in 2026. It really is a good session. It really is. Just a reminder, as always, every week I give you these reminders. We have reduced rates on calls and chats on 1-2-listen.com a few times a week, typically Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, and of course the 12th of each month and new and full moons usually. If you want to be notified of our specials, go to 1-2-listen.com and sign up for 1-2 promotions, which is just leaving your email address. While you're there, post what you're grateful for on our gratitude board, and the advisors of 1-2-listen will add our intention and attention to your intention. Or if it's something that is in your existence, we will celebrate with you. So again, thanks for listening. However, and whenever you do, there is programming on 1-2 Radio 24/7, and there are archives of all the shows from all the hosts in the on-demand section at 1-2radio.com. You can download them anytime you want, and 1-2 Radio is a great source of inspiration, information, and support, and a lot of passion from a lot of different voices. So I invite you to take advantage of that. And right now, I want to say thank you to Serena for producing the show today and all that she does for us and for me. I really appreciate it. Let's move into the teaching segment now by listening to a few minutes of Ultra Lounge by the Gordon Brothers from their Nirvana Groove CD and Sequoia Records. Enjoy it. That's our segue into the teaching segment. So just enjoy it. Let your energy shift. And I will be back right after. You're listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for being here today. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that music. Well, as I said at the beginning of the show, I want to talk more about release in this teaching segment. And as I was thinking about it, I was reminded that, you know, the New Thought teachers, the Florence Scovel Shinn and the people that were kind of at the beginning of New Thought, at the beginning of the 20th century, called it the law of circulation. And that is a really cool term because, you know, just like blood has to flow through the body to be healthy, supply, whatever that is, what you need as you need it, is supply, has to flow through our lives in the form of giving or releasing and receiving. If we hold on to things, the energy stagnates. But if we let them go, we're available to receive. We're available, we have space in our space, and not necessarily to receive the same thing, like as in the case of the dishes, you know, I got a new set that took the place of the old, but we are available to receive whatever it is that we need, because supply is what you need when you need it. And when we are, if we can consider ourselves the inlet and outlet of supply, again, it's what is needed when is needed. And it doesn't just go for physical things, but also for relationships, jobs, money, etc. In releasing or letting go, we become the inlet and outlet of supply. And supply is my awareness of God in the midst of me. That's what supply is. Source. Think of the word source. Source is the source of everything. It's a rich and live, it's an alive, flowing kind of word, isn't it? Source. Well, supply is the same thing. Supply is the energy of, or the substance, excuse me, substance is a way better word, substance of what we have in the outer plane. You know, what we need. Supply is the substance of that demonstration, of whatever it is. And nothing belongs to us. Everything belongs to God, which is us. We are the instruments of God's appearing in the physical. The transparencies through which God pours forth dominion into the physical plane as the demonstration of the kingdom of heaven within each of us, or as a demonstration of the things that we need or desire. Release, though, in the context of spiritual growth, as in releasing guilt, shame, remorse, regret, self-judgment, the idea of smallness, you know, that we are small, victims, martyrs, you know, that whole thing, as well as limiting beliefs, opinions, rules, etc., is the same concept. Releasing what is not serving you to experience a greater understanding and demonstration of the infinite self. It's always a circle. What goes out makes space for more to come in, but it makes space for what, you know, again, in the concept of supply, what you need when you need it. And you don't necessarily know what that is. You know, as far as understanding, you don't necessarily know. But, you know, to be that demonstration of the infinite self is to be the transparency through which God's dominion flows into the world. But I think, and this is what I want to throw out there. This is kind of what's come to me as an idea. And again, pondering, and we're going to get into some heavy-duty stuff with Joseph Campbell and Alan Watts after I finish my little what I want to share first. Like I'm more important than they are. But I invite you to float along because this is heavy-duty. But I invite you to float along right now. Just open your head, take what resonates, leave what doesn't. That's always the invitation at this show. To this teaching segment. Take what resonates, leave what doesn't, but don't struggle. Struggle just, you know, is a distraction. Just float. Here's what I feel, or what I think. on the spiritual level, when we're talking about you know, those things that dog us, you know, guilt, shame, remorse, regret, unforgiveness, resentment, you know, that all of that stuff, which is just negative emotion and just is a bunch of big rocks on our backpack, you know, of our consciousness, you know, taking up space in our consciousness. But, you know, beliefs, rules, those kind of things, I think it's important to own those beliefs, rules, and the experiences that have caused guilt, remorse, etc. Now, let me try to explain what I mean by that. The past is dead and gone, period. You are not the person that you were when this show started. Neither am I. So, gone. It does not exist. So, when memories and their accompanying emotions show up, a very effective way of working with them is to think about, to remember who you were when they happened. Who you were. We live lifetimes in our lifetime. Not just because we go from being a child to a teenager to a young adult to a middle adult to, you know, not that. That's not what I'm talking about. But I think every single time we have a shift in consciousness, something comes into our life that is a life-changing, whether it's a big moment like getting married or losing someone, or, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be those, but just the moment when you have a realization that you're in a different place than you were last week, or you understand something differently. Lifetimes in our lifetimes just is another way of saying evolving. And we leave those lifetimes behind, but we did live them. And no matter what mistakes we think we made, no matter, you know, how many times we judge ourselves for, you know, we could have chosen differently or we knew better before we did something, all of those things are meaningless because you would not be who you are right now. Right now. And right now is all there is. You know, you've come a long way, but you wouldn't be here had you not been who you were back then. It's really just that simple. So, a really effective way, again, to deal with negative emotion and the things that dog us, as I said, because they do, is not only to remember who you were when they happened, but to remember where you were in your life and in your growth and what was happening in your experience. Really and truly, what you were living at the time, and own it. Own it. I think when you do that, you can have compassion for your past self. Because my mom used to say, she goes, you know, I really think everybody's just doing the best they can. And that's a really cool thing for me to keep in mind when I'm, you know, not being so compassionate with myself or with someone else. But, you know, to have compassion for your past self who did not know what you know now, who was just living life in the moment as it was coming up. You can have a spirit-to-spirit conversation with him or her and forgive. Just imagine you can see yourself at 20 or whatever, and see yourself just sitting across from you and forgive your then self for what happened and your now self for holding them in such judgment and condemnation for all this time and for paying over and over for something that cannot be changed. For all that suffering, because we suffer because we want things to be different than they actually are or were. Well, it's all self-inflicted. So, excuse me, ownership instead of self-judgment, not just for the past, but for everything that happens now, is a very freeing concept. You know, we're still in a human incarnation. We're still going to make choices that maybe after the fact weren't the best choice. But instead of going to, I shouldn't have done that, and having it replay in your head over and over and gain momentum as it replays over and over, own it. Own it. Yep, I did that. Not my most shining moment, but I did it. And now I let it go. And just in saying, I did that. I could have made a different choice, but you don't want to go there. I don't think you even have to say that. I think if you just say, I did that, which is exactly what happened, it drops off. It just kind of, it's the sting of it, you know, the sting of regret. Can't be there. It just drops off. You drop it off the cliff. And that is giving yourself the grace that God holds you in at all times. At all times. There's no condemnation in God. None. And it eliminates a ton of distraction and compounding negative emotion. Ownership just kind of lets you walk up and look that thing in the eye rather than giving it power over you. When you do that, when you just own it, because, you know, when you don't and you let it take over, what are you doing? You're just blaming. And blaming is the most disempowering thing you can do, even when you're blaming yourself. Maybe especially when you're blaming yourself. So now I want to delve deeper into the principle of release and just ponder it. That's what we're doing today. We're just pondering it because I'm going to share some incredible stuff with you in the next few minutes. Last week, Serena was helping me with a YouTube issue. And while I was looking at my channel, you know, the list to the right of the big screen is all the, you know, all my teachers, you know, the people that I listen to all the time and new shorts and stuff that I hadn't seen before. And of course, there was a short by Joseph Campbell called The Mythic Symbology of Release. And I went, holy cow, you know, of course it was there. Here you go. You want to know more? You want to expand in your concept of releasing and how powerful it is? Here you go. That was a kiss on the cheek from God. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because last week, and in fact, what I just said, barely scratches the surface of a powerful and life-affirming spiritual principle that release is. So our wise men this week are Joseph Campbell and Alan Watts. And again, float along with me, ponder along with me, because this is really deep mind-expanding stuff. Or at least it was for me. Maybe it won't be for you, but this is a gift that I had to share. An absolute gift. So the Joseph Campbell short, it was about 4 minutes long, and it's called, again, The Mythic Symbology of Release. And it was taken from an interview, and this is not verbatim, so I just took notes, and I probably will interject because I can't help myself sometimes, but he said, a mythic symbol for release is like a winged fish or a feathered serpent. Creatures that are bound, like in the case of the fish, to the water, or in the case of the serpent, to the earth, but able to fly. The earth and water are the symbols of bondage, and flying is the symbol of release. He said, this is important to know, for people to know, because you don't have to be free of bondage in order to have release. In other words, and I'm interjecting, you don't have to be free of the problem in your experience in order to be released from it in your consciousness. That's what he's saying. He said that an individual finds release when he no longer identifies with the history of his carnal body, but with the consciousness that informs the body. When he identifies with the consciousness rather than with the vehicle, he knows that the bondage of the vehicle has nothing to do with bondage of consciousness. And he is free in bondage. Through that identification, he is free, even though he is still in his physical body, in this physical experience. Said mythologically speaking, the shackles fall off his wrist without Mythologically, the shackles fall without leaving his wrists. And then he said, it's the condition of what is known in Buddhism as the Bodhisattva, whose being is illumination. He knows that in the world, in the field of bondage, the eternal power plays. And so you have this joyful participation in the sorrows of the world. You can't eliminate the sorrows of the world. Time involves sorrow. Being in time is your carnal body. But that which is participating has a different dimension. It is the eternal. And it can joyfully affirm this. Man, talk about it. I can't tell you how many times I listened to that. I can't tell you. It's just, that's powerful. That identification with the eternal, with the infinite self, even though no matter what's going on in your experience is still going on. But you're not, quote, unquote, in it. You're above it. And when you're in the eternal, when you're in the infinite self, you are available for answers. You're available for whatever support you need. When you're in that, just in the experience of it, in the emotion of it, you completely shut that off because you're believing that this thing has power over you, no matter what it is. And there is no power external to you. None. So I listened to another video of Joseph Campbell's, and this one was called Hell and Transcendence, and it wasn't a short, it's a little longer. And it's an excerpt from a lecture that he gave on the works of James Joyce. Again, this is not verbatim, but he's talking about hell. And when I first saw the title of this video, I could hear Reverend Ike in my ear going, heaven and hell exist within us. There is no external hell. There is no external heaven. Heaven and hell exist within us. And that's true. That's true because there is nothing but consciousness. There is nothing but God, but life, but source, but consciousness. Anyway, Joseph Campbell said, contrary to Joyce's version of hell, which is, you know, kind of the traditional suffering and punishment, Dante's version of hell is exactly proper to a person. Being fixed to the temporal commitments that ego decided was the great thing for your life becomes your hell. In other words, clinging to things like in the material world, you know, when we're all just, as Ram Dass said, we're all trying to get back to the garden. We all remember somewhere within us that feeling of pure peace, pure life, pure love, pure happiness. That's what we're looking for. But if we're totally focused in the material, we're trying to get things in the material to give us those feelings. But the things in the material are temporal. They are not going to stay. They are not eternal. So being, like he says, being fixed to the temporal is clinging to materialistic things. So temporal commitments, This is a great, I'm going to read that sentence again because this is terrific. Being fixed to the temporal commitments that ego decided was the great thing for your life becomes your hell. He said this view is shared by Buddhist, Hindu, and other Eastern philosophies. Hell is the place of being fixed, attached, clinging. Hell is symbolic of the state of a soul that does not open to the spiritual, but remains stuck to the material aspect. The foreground, so to speak, of the experience, but doesn't break through. He said Aristotle's term, catharsis, means how through pity and terror we are purged. It's a ritual term of being purged of your rational ego commitment system and opened out so that you become transparent to transcendence. Until then, you cannot experience the beatific vision or seeing God as God because you're stuck in the weeds. That's my interjection. Then he referred, to the talk he'd given the previous day about the fall and the Redeemer. He said there are two ways for the spirit to enter the world, the material world. One is in the way of the fall, Adam and Eve cast out of the garden. And the other is in the way of the Savior, the Christ, who comes out of love intentionally into the world. And he said, all you have to do to transform your hell into a paradise is to turn your fall into a voluntary act. Say yay to it. This is my intention to be the mess that I am. And you'll find that you're an angel. He said, that's a very interesting thing. Joyful participation in the sorrows and everything changes. He said, it's as simple as that. And the whole audience laughed. And he laughed too. But owning it, just owning it. This is where I am. I intentionally did this. You know, yep, I did it. Yep, I did it. Now, Alan Watts, to follow and to finish with Alan Watts, in a lecture called On Buddhism, which is on alanwatts.org, he talks about the middle way. Again, the Buddhist, the middle way. He not in this lecture, but it's like when a teacher goes to his guru and says, the middle way is to stop the ideal is to stop desiring, which is not possible. It's not possible. So the student goes to the teacher and says, "What I can't figure out how to stop desiring not to desire. How do I do that?" And the teacher says, "Well, try to stop desiring not to desire. Just be aware of it and try to stop that." Student comes back again and says, "I still can't." And the long story short is, do what you can. Do what you can. You have the intention. You're on a path. Do what you can to be on the path. Again, you're not perfect. You're in a human incarnation, but you can't stop desiring. It's impossible. To get up and walk across the room involves desire. So, it's do the best that you can and don't judge yourself for it. So Watts said in this lecture called On Buddhism, he said the middle way doesn't mean moderation. It means the bringing together of opposites, mind and matter, mind and body, mysticism and sensuality, unity and multiplicity, conformity and individualism. And he refers to the bodhisattva, a being which is central to Buddhism. A bodhisattva is about to become a Buddha, but then decides to sacrifice himself for others. The bodhisattva becomes a Buddha who is delivered from being involved in the world forever. if the bodhisattva decides to become a Buddha. But a person can turn back, not become a Buddha, but decide to just be. It's a powerful thing to be the bodhisattva that goes back into the material world and works for the world's liberation. A bodhisattva is regarded is regarded as a superior being. The choice to go back into the world is an act of supreme compassion. Unlike humans who return over and over to the material plane through reincarnation to experience human life and all that it entails for the purpose of realizing who we truly are, the infinite self, realizing our oneness with God, that the bodhisattva deliberately returns to the material world with eyes wide open to serve humanity. In the East, they're regarded as gods. In the West, as saviors, like Jesus. There's a profound Hindu philosophical idea underneath all of this, and that is Advaita. Advaita Vedanta is, Advaita means non-dualism. Vedanta is oneness with God. But the apparent duality, he says, the apparent duality of I and thou, the knower and the known, is unreal. The apparent duality of subject and object, the enlightened and the ignorant, Maya, or world illusion and reality, is unreal. So the apparent duality of bondage and deliverance is unreal. The perfectly wise man is the one who realizes vividly that the ideal place is the place where you are. If you could see this moment, that you need nothing beyond this moment, now, sitting here, aside from what's going on, aside from your thoughts, here and now contains absolutely all that is needed. Joseph Campbell said, this moment contains eternity. This moment is eternity. Alan Watts said, you are the cosmos centered in the place you call here and now. So I'm feeling pretty complete with that. And again, ponder. Ponder. The place where you are is the ideal place. It's like, it reminds me of Emmett Fox, you know, saying in his talk about right place and true place. Right place is where you are, no matter what's going on. It's the right place because it's where you are. And that helps. I mean, just all of that, talking about that, sharing that with you is just, I think that in and of itself is release. So thank you. Thank you for joining me today. As a, again, thank you. We are complete. Complete. I don't need to say anything else except you've been listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. We're here on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you listen to the world. Yes, I can speak clearly. Please have a very blessed week and stay tuned for Katie Weaver. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.